weekends on the Fanatic. D-Lineham and Joe Torty. Sports talk never stops. Listen all weekend to 97.5 The Fanatic. Philadelphia.
Good morning. D-Lineham, Joe Torty, 97.5, The Fanatic, Dylan McKinnon, producing the program as we are rolling on together until 8 a.m. D, we had a jam-packed day yesterday. There was plenty of college football. There was NBA G League action. We need our Springer update. And, of course, at the NBA level, the big fella was back in the mix, even though not a whole lot else went right for the Sixers. Pretty disappointing result, losing to the Timberwolves for the first time since 2016. Good morning, D-Lineham. How are you?
I'm good. I actually thought it was a very entertaining game. Timberwolves, you know, had a five-game winning streak.
They look like it.
Before they had lost to Charlotte the night before. I would say that Embiid's presence, while he was dominant, he definitely impacted how others were playing, which is on them. Maxey was impacted probably the greatest, did not have his particularly good game. We've talked so much about him not turning the ball over, and he had four turnovers last night, and one was huge. But I didn't think Seth played particularly well. And Danny Green, I don't think people realized, was on a minute restriction. They mentioned it after, but they did not mention it enough during the game so you could understand, because I thought he played well. And Shake Milton was out of the mix with a groin injury, and I don't think people understand that he's been a reliable bench scorer. So entertaining it was, a loss it was. For the first time in a number of years, the home court is not that for them right now. So,
indeed, I've read this morning, I was, you know, looking for answers and things like that. And there was an article in the Inquirer that pointed out two things. One, that with Shake Milton being out and Danny Green being limited, Sixers still haven't been able to get their group together, their whole group, to be healthy and competing on the same court at the same time. But the other thing kind of alludes a little bit to what you were talking about, where you have Tobias Harris coming back from his hip injury. You have Joel Embiid coming back off of the COVID list. And there were people that enjoyed, myself included, Tyrese Maxey and what the rest of the crew was doing, or at least the development that some of the other pieces showed with those guys out. But shots coming back, probably 20 for Embiid, 15 for Harris, those have to come from somewhere. Do you get a read on where or what the team is going to look like when they're closer to full strength? Is it reasonable to expect Tyrese Maxey, for example, to continue to do the same stuff that he was doing when those guys were out offensively?
Well, I don't know if you're going to see him score 30, which he did in back-to-back occasions in the absence of Embiid, but he's a capable scorer. The more important part is making the decisions of, you know, when do you have that open lane that you should still take it, and instead of always deferring to the big fella. And that's what he did. Now, obviously, Joel was playing extremely well, got to the line ridiculously. I did not like that he fell to the ground way too many times. Always is happening. I don't understand it. It doesn't need to be that way. But to your point about shots and how many shots can these guys get, those two are going to combine for about 30, between 30 and 35. But that doesn't mean the deferring part was where Maxey didn't look like himself. Of making, he's been very, very good at making decisions and feeling comfortable in making those decisions. And I mean, 3 weeks is a long time for somebody to be out of your lineup. Let me just say that. And knowing the level of player that Embiid is, and him, you know, he might have had a slow start, but he certainly finished strong. I would have said the other was going to happen. He's known for having strong first quarters, and then maybe in the fourth, he's out of gas. And that would have seemed to be the formula when you're coming back off of a three-week layoff. But his, I mean, some of the moves and plays that he made late, I mean, forget about it. In regulation, overtime number one, overtime number two. I mean, if anybody had any concerns of conditioning, weight, any of the above, this guy came back with a vengeance.
610-632-0975. Yeah, he didn't look at all like there was a conditioning issue. Played a significant number of minutes. Like you said, D, his weight didn't look like that was an issue at all. Good to see Embiid back. And you saw how important, even though it was in a losing effort, double overtime, you saw how important he is to the team and how different they look. I thought how different they look with
him.
They're
supposed to.
Yeah.
He's an all-star of he's as elite as it comes. This guy's a game changer. He's supposed to make you a whole lot better, and he does.
610-632-0975. Did you catch the Iron Bowl yesterday by any chance? Alabama and Auburn.
Yeah. Yesterday. I missed the final 111 though. Because I thought they were dead in the water.
I missed the exact same portion.
Well, because the guy who ran out of bounds,
right?
Alabama should be sending him flowers today.
Yes.
Right? He stays in bounds. I don't think that they even have the opportunity to do what they did. But obviously I went back and watched it after the fact. It's certainly what happened yesterday in football. We were having the conversation about the Final Four.
Yeah. Not good news for the Bearcats yesterday. It didn't work out great.
Well, let me ask you why. You're automatically putting Alabama in there? Because if Alabama, don't they play Georgia this week?
So Alabama would play. So here's the thing. If they would have lost to Auburn.
Yeah, then it's a shoo-in.
Then it's a shoo-in. The other problem is that Michigan beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
So I don't see them knocking Ohio State out of the playoff.
Well, my only thing would be then what we were talking about yesterday, then your wins and losses don't matter. And you ought to say that.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
We'll
see.
That's
the feel that I got immediately afterwards. Because we've seen some big blowouts in the Big Ten. So, like, if it looked like Ohio State, Michigan State, for example, where Ohio State got smashed by Michigan, then I think that you might have a stronger case. But the first thing I thought was that's not great news for Cincinnati that Michigan won.
Afterwards, Herbert? No, it's not Herbert. What's the ESPN guy?
Herb Street.
He had him in.
Oh, he did?
He did.
Okay. Well, that's good. I hope they do get in.
Yeah. He was definitely, they were in on his account. Now he could change his four between now and next week. And next week could impact, I guess. I don't know.
By and large, everybody else, you know, quote unquote, relevant, did what they were supposed to do. Notre Dame beat Stanford by a million. But Alabama being like a 40-point favorite against Auburn.
Yeah, see, I don't.
Going to double overtime. Who knows?
Yeah. And again, if you're the Bearcats and you do end up on the outside looking in with zero blemishes.
Right.
It's just not right.
It isn't. I agree.
Well, then just say your whole system is a farce.
Well, it's been a farce for a long time.
Well, I get it.
Dating back to the BCS.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yes. I was thinking about that yesterday. I thought, oh, boy. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. And also, in addition to all those other things, it is Eagles game day.
That's right.
And there was a delightful New York Post article that I was reading this morning talking about how, you know how we were just talking yesterday about how it seems like Washington's always the team that's giving the Eagles the lump of coal Christmas week. Talking about how the Eagles and Philadelphia in general has been New York's thorn in their side for across a variety of sports over the course of the years. And I was thinking about that. Like, I didn't realize, for example, how good the Eagles' record is against the Eli Manning-led Giants. Eli Manning never beat the Eagles.
No.
Something that never happened.
Yeah, that I would agree. What do you mean across more sports, though?
So, like, the Mets. There were several years where the Mets had big-time aspirations And
the Phillies were in their way.
Not of late. Even those not good Phillies teams kind of messed with the Mets on the way to the postseason, things like that.
The Sixers, I can tell you that. That just started of late.
Yes.
Because for years you would go into Madison Square Garden and it was like, they haven't won here in X number.
Right, exactly.
So that would have switched more recently.
I'll go check out the article again to bring up the more specific examples.
Maybe on the ice, that could be a possibility.
Certainly, I
don't know.
And then what was the Springer report yesterday? What did you make of what you saw?
The kid can play.
Yeah,
I like him. He is bigger than I was expecting. He's got a solid build. He's got an ability to get to the rim. Remember, I said I was watching and College Park was playing no defense
because
they were highlights. But to see him in person, they put the ball in his hands, which is the right thing to do. I feel like they're developing him in a similar way that they did Shake Milton.
Okay.
I would say that the kid is not crazy quick, but he has the ability to change speeds. So it looks like he always has the possibility of beating somebody off the dribble. He's active at both ends. Yeah, I like him. And he just turned 19 in September. So, again, it was right. They're, as a G League squad, Delaware can be pretty good because Paul Reed was down there yesterday and Springer. And they combined for, I think it was 46 points. And, you know, Paul Reed's going to get you a double-double just by walking on the court. That's just who he is. And because the G League has this new format, they have a season within the season, which Adam Silver has actually talked about doing it with the NBA, where, you know, they would have a tournament and there was like $1 million up for grabs there to keep it interesting. So in its own way, the G League is doing an in-season tournament. So it's called the Showcase Cup. And right now, the Celtics G League team played last night. I didn't see their score, but they were tied for the top of their division. And it's only a 12-game run.
Oh, wow.
So whoever is winning their division at the end of these 12 games, they all go to what they call the Showcase Cup Classic. And then the top 4% winning percentages after those four go also. And it's a single elimination tournament.
Huh.
And then the others play just to make up the two games. And then when they're done that tournament, they come back and they start their regular season.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of like that, actually.
I know. Well, I mean, you think in the beginning, you're like, what? And then you realize it's a sprint for the 12 games. Like, you can't falter.
Right, exactly.
Right. So Delaware's 5-1. And they're halfway home. And the other part of it is, you play similar to what the Sixers are going to do with Charlotte coming up, you know, where they'll play twice in 3 days.
Yep.
The G League has done that. You go to somebody and you're going to play them twice. You may play like the Delaware plays back to back this time, but it could be 2 and 3 days, you know, where there's a gap in between. But you're seeing them in back to back outings. And I think there's an element to that as well. Like Delaware kicked their butt yesterday. Can they come back and win with that same kind of ease? I'm going to guess not, but we'll see. And if you have Paul Reed and Springer, you're a little ahead of the game.
Now, from what you've seen, Dee, in those circumstances, will the team stay wherever they are?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, they're here for 3 days.
So that's cool setup itself.
I do believe it is because it's probably saving you a little money.
That's probably why they set it up that way.
That and the whole showcase.
Right.
And in the showcase, you're playing the teams that are in your regions.
Until
you get to the cup, which is, it's always been in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Or I shouldn't say that. First year, it was in Toronto. They're not going there.
They're not going to go to Toronto. Yeah, that's the truth.
Canada's not probably opening their doors to people again. So Vegas has been where they do it.
610-632-0975 is your phone number. Top aboard the conversation. I'm having difficulty locating this article, but I'm seeing another article about the Eagles and the Giants. And it's this guy who's this lifelong New York fan. And he's like, I don't know how much longer this list needs to be, from Chuck Bednarik to Herm Edwards to
But that's just the Eagles.
That's
to the
just
Giants.
The Eagles. Yeah, I need to find more.
That I would agree with.
I need to find more.
Because I remember even seeing, well, heck, the Brian Westbrook years.
The Westbrook,
come on.
Deshaun Jackson. Like, you're sick of it. If you're a New York Giants fan, you are sick
of it. I don't recall the results, but I remember the hype going into any time it was Runyon versus Strahan. That was
sure.
a big deal.
Man. Do you have a good feeling about this game today?
You know, it's so funny. Because remember I talked about the sweep.
Yes.
The sweep has really gone to the wayside. What
yes.
did I started something bad on Friday. And then I said, just because the first two have lost doesn't mean I should change my opinion about. I really do think that the Eagles have given me every reason to think that they will play like they have the last couple of weeks. And I don't think the Giants are as good as the Eagles. So
right.
I'm going to stick with how I felt and not go with this. Kind of break the momentum of Flyers falling to the Hurricanes and then the Sixers falling to the Timberwolves. And in both cases, both teams, I mean, when it was 2-1 after one, I felt strong about the Flyers the other night. Then it was 3-2 and all of a sudden it was 3-3 in a blink. And then everything fell apart.
Right, exactly.
And with the Sixers, they were down 20. Came back and make this a game.
They're talking about going to double overtime. I mean, that's a pretty big comeback.
D'Angelo Russell, man, his three-point shot is worth getting up in him.
And Carl Anthony Towns wasn't missing yesterday. Anthony Edwards did some cool stuff in transition.
Well, Carl Anthony Towns fouling out was a big deal.
It was down the stretch.
Embiid did what he did because he's Embiid, but I would have like to have seen if Carl Anthony Towns had been there, his results have been the same.
610-632-0975 is your phone number. Before we get to Jerome, or I guess after we get to Jerome, I also want to ask you about Bill Belichick was stumping for the Hall of Fame for a player. And I wanted to get your take on his read on the Hall of Fame and the player. Let's go to Jerome in Elkins Park next on The Fanatic. Hey, Jerome.
Morning. Left out the could. But it is morning, and that's good. I watched the game, and I'm not going to, like D said, the Sixers, MB came back, and at the beginning of the game, that movement that they had, they were like they were strangers. It went stagnant. And for me, I don't know, Glenn, I understand you're going to ride it out and have these are the players you're going to go with. But if you see something that it's not a good mix where you had to rely on your bench at times, you could make a substitution, I think, and just send a message like, look, you know, they played the prior night and lost and you're at home. Now it went into double overtime and, you know, it's a thing where, okay, Embiid put up tremendous numbers. But there are things of, I don't know whether it's the fact of how much he has played in college or whatever, but he goes into an area of a floor in which if they're standing around looking at him, the chances of something good happening, you know, drops dramatically. I'm going to just say this, and then I want to hear what you guys think. With Towns being out, they still had two players on their team in which you had a faith in the fact that they wouldn't fall apart, that they would deliver in the crutch. And you can't say that about the Sixers. Daryl Morey has said that. We don't have a difference maker. And it's true, you know?
No, I can't say that Joel Embiid is not a difference maker.
Well, I'm saying.
Well, I'll just tell you. Look at the stat sheet. Watch that game. Now, if you want to tell me the last play where he catches the ball on the three-point line, I'm going to say, one, I wouldn't have thrown it to him there. Two, he could have passed it to Seth, who was wide open. But if you're going to argue that he was not a difference maker in that game, then I can't have that can be Daryl. But this guy is a difference maker, and I bet I could find at least 29 other coaches in the league that would say the same.
Well, I'm not talking blaming him for the loss. I'm saying that there is not another player You can go with Tobias Harris. I know I'm still been with you on sacred ground. That with the experience they're supposed to have, that there's supposed to be another option. And the Sixers, you have said, and Joe and everything, that other teams in this league, the Miamis, the Chicagos, the Atlantas, Milwaukee's where they are. They're there because they have different options, and they have a scheme and a system when things as far as your plays are not there to be made, something that's out of the box. And that is what the Sixers are lacking. They're lacking that kill instinct, and that is as bad as it is to say 500 in this city. But that option to take and say, look, guys, this is what we're going to do, period.
Well, I mean, Jerome, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it. I just, Dee, I'm more in line with what you were saying, that it's not a secret that it's Joel Embiid's team and that he's the guy that they're going to down the stretch. Like you said, could he have made a pass to Seth Curry at the end of the game? And then are we even having this conversation?
Well, I don't, him catching it where he caught it, I wouldn't have thrown it to him there is my point.
Right.
And he gets trapped because he's now double teamed and he's up against the sideline. But yeah, Seth's open, but you're picking that one play. I'm just going to say the number of big shots he made down the stretch, the three pointer in regulation that puts them up 98-95, the shot on the baseline that he made, I don't know which overtime that was, closest to me when yep. I'm watching the screen. I mean, the guy had 42-10.
610-632-0975. This weekend's programming is brought to you by the Berlin Farmers Market. Find something for everyone on your gift list at Berlin Farmers Market. For hours, info, directions, and more, visit BerlinFarmersMarket.com. Dee, I wanted to ask you about...
And by the way, can I just tell?
Yeah.
D'Angelo Russell made shots. There were back-to-back threes that were killer. But Anthony Edwards didn't make big-time plays down the stretch. So don't tell me that they had multiple, we know for sure they're going to make a play. He did not make shots down the stretch. It ended up 8 of 21. And Carl Anthony Towns was not making shots for you because he fouled out of the game.
Wasn't there.
So what? You can't just say, we don't have a difference maker. Because that's what he did say. You do have a difference maker. Now, if you don't like how the game played out, if you don't like that Seth Curry wasn't good last night, then say that. But don't say they don't have a difference maker.
Sorry. Yeah, a little frustrated.
Well, I'm just saying, the guy's one of the, he's top 10 almost, in the league.
Almost won the MVP last year.
He came in second.
610-632-0975. I want to ask you about the Hall of Fame, too, just in case you weren't fired up enough. It's Dee Lynam and Joe Torti right here, rolling on until 8 on The Fanatic.
Weekends on The Fanatic, Dee Lynam and Joe Torti. Sports talk never stops. Listen all weekend to 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back with Dee Lynam, Joe Torti, 97.5 The Fanatic. Dee, who won last week in our predictions? Do you recall who?
The Eagles definitely put up more points than I was giving them credit.
Me too.
Me and Dylan had comparable. He had like...
I had 20-3. I was way off. We were all in that area.
Yeah, I had I said 24, I think. 24-19 or something.
I think you said 20-19. I said 17.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So we.
None of us had gave him enough credit for putting up points.
We were all on the under. Yeah, that was not great. So
I guess you won because you had the biggest blowout.
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to claim victory in that. So, you know, I'll vacate the crown if that's the case. This week, do you ever read on what kind of game it would be? High scoring, low scoring? We've seen the Eagles' commitment to running the ball. We've seen the Giants' kind of offensive ineptitude. Leads me to lean into a lower scoring game. Of course, I was victimized by that last week. You see either team being able to put up, you know, big time points this week? Yeah, exactly. That's kind of where I am. Like, oh, jeez.
I mean, I'm going to go yes for the Eagles putting up points only because I, like you, I got bit last week by not giving them that.
45.5 is the over under. It's one of the lower totals on the board.
I feel like last week was a pretty low number. It was in the 40s.
Yeah. Yeah. It might have been a little higher than this, but not by much.
I don't think it was by much.
Yeah, so the Eagles currently, well, they opened at like 147, I think, on the money line and -3. Like you said, D, 3.5 is the line now.
I know 3.5 is the line, which says it's supposed to be, you know, not a blowout for the Eagles.
But you are on the road.
You are on the road, but 20-19 didn't do me anything last week.
No, I hear you. And the Eagles, it's not like historical dominance matters on a like week in, week out basis, especially given the turnover in the Giants coaching staff and things like that. But I don't know. I just,
Barkley definitely is playing.
Not definitely playing. They said that he is likely going to play. He's listed as questionable right now with his ankle injury.
All right, I'll put that like Embiid last night was questionable and he played.
Yeah, if I had to bet, I would say that Barkley plays. I have a feeling that this game's going to go over 45.5. I do think that there's a chance that some points get scored in this one. Only because the Eagles could run all over this team. And we've seen the Eagles make big plays as well. It's not like 3 yards in a cloud of dust for the Eagles. We've seen when Jalen Hurts gets out into the open field or Miles Sanders has a crease, Boston Scott, a lot of these guys have the ability to make extended plays provided that the lanes are there. And the Giants just aren't very good up front. They're just not a team in their front seven that's going to be able to control a team that's committed to the ground game the way that the Eagles have been. So provided, it's a big caveat for me, provided that the Eagles remain committed to running the football the way that they have in the last several weeks, I feel really good about their opportunity to put some points up this week. I'll say that.
I was just looking, because last year, the Giants defense was ranked 9th and 10th in rushing yards allowed.
Pretty good.
Why is it not telling me what they're doing this year? Is it that bad?
That's a good question. Let's see what we can find here. They're defensively allowing almost 120 rushing yards per game. I'm not sure where that ranks, but I know
it's a significant number less than what the Eagles were able to do last week with that 279, but and that was against the historically good.
Oh, the Saints defense. Look out.
Well, no, because I'm not kidding. Through 10 games, what they had allowed really on the ground was in top 10 all time in yards allowed on the ground through 10 games in the history of the NFL. They were top 10.
Well, it's why if you're watching with objective eyes, you have to buy what you're seeing from the Eagles. Because, yeah, you could say that the Saints had a bad day. Maybe they did. But a bad day doesn't take an historic defense to 279. Yeah. Exactly.
I think what it does go to show you is when you have multiple players that you are willing to use running the ball, and they do it in different ways.
Yes.
So how do the Giants solve that problem. And the key will be, and I think you did learn this last week, like your commitment to running the ball. They didn't get very far on the first two drives, I think, the Eagles. And yet Sirianni still stayed with running the ball. And over the long haul of the game, the 279 speaks volumes.
Yeah, certainly. I'm trying to pull
Dylan
this.
Dylan says 23rd in yards allowed, Giants.
All they right, went so from 10th last 23rd. Year to 23rd?
That's what I'm telling you.
Woof. Now, of course, given the trend last week, that will mean that they'll shut the Eagles' run game down completely.
Right? I'm going with the numbers.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah. You have to go with the numbers.
I might have gotten burned last week, but I can't get away from looking at numbers and making a decision based on that.
Okay, so Eagles, let's say wide receivers against Giants secondary.
Eagles wide receivers against Giants secondary. Okay.
Do you like the Eagles matchup there? You're talking about, you know, Devontae Smith on pace for a 1,000-yard season.
I like Devontae too. Are you telling me I have to say, is he going to have a 100-yard game?
I'm saying, do you think that that they'll be shut down? Do you think the Eagles' offensive weapons are shut down by their secondary?
I don't.
I don't see that either. If there is a spot where...
I like the way Goddard's playing, too.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, you look at Goddard, what he could do against tight ends or against linebackers and safeties. I just think the Giants' defense is going to have a really tough time. With my huge soliloquy about Kenny Golladay, however... Like, it's still a player that once upon a time I really, really liked. That's the one area where the Giants could have success, is if they are able to hit big plays against the Eagles secondary.
Daniel Jones, seriously.
Daniel Jones had like an 88-yard run against the Eagles a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago. That's still his greatest highlight, probably.
Probably of his whole career. The one where he fell down. And then the one afterwards where he didn't, and he was, like, laughing about it. Yeah, those were simpler times for the New York Giants.
I wonder how long they stay committed to him being their quarterback.
I was going
to
ask you the same thing, because we just talked about franchise quarterback being a strange and fickle tag.
Well, no, it's only to me, because I think the franchise quarterbacks have come about over time of making an organization a winning organization or an elite team over time. Then you get to have that tag.
As opposed to being anointed.
We put it on the front of their career.
Yeah.
It's supposed to come after. But they would, I guarantee you, I could find an article from when this guy was drafted that they believed he was going to be the franchise quarterback.
Yeah. Certainly, and not only that, D, there were people that looked at it and liked Daniel Jones's tools and liked his abilities as a developmental quarterback, and then saw where the Giants picked him and thought
that
this was
the problem.
A big reach. Yeah, it's something that they didn't expect or see. And really, like, I can't say that anybody's wrong there, because there are things that you see in Daniel Jones, like his mobility and his ability to throw the deep ball, that you do like. You're like, yeah, sure, I could totally see tools there, but clearly doesn't appear ready to lead a bad team. Doesn't appear ready to lift a team like the Giants that needs a quarterback to lift them up. Is that a fair assessment of it?
I would beware of Golladay today. Found an article where they say Jason Garrett completely misused him. And if Garrett's not there, do they
unleash him?
Well, it's kind of what looked like when Miles Sanders went down the next week. All of a sudden you were running the ball when you weren't running it at all. Now, maybe that was coincidence.
It's possible.
And Miles fit right in when he came back. So it quite possibly could have been coincidence, coupled with a wake-up call. I don't know. But if this is true and you get rid of a guy, the first thing I'm doing if I'm a play caller this week is possibly doing things different for Galladay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if doing things the same got the last guy fired
then I think I'll try to use the guy better. I didn't realize how much money they owe him.
Galladay. Well, yeah, they just signed that contract this past offseason. So.
$45 million over the next 4 years.
Man. I loved him. I wanted the Eagles to get him. I thought that was a good thing, and maybe it would have been.
But that's why I say scheme could matter.
Yeah, in this case, it seems like it could. Well, plus, and we talked about Jones's struggles distributing the football to targets. You know, clearly, with Sterling Shepard out, Kadarius Toney not in, things have gone differently offensively for the Giants as opposed to how they thought they were going to go. But I do wonder if now you got me worried. Now you got me worried that I'm going to have to recant my last big confession about wrong about Galladay. Now
I don't think you have to recant. I'm just saying I didn't even look for that, and it was a headline that popped up.
Well, there you go. Slay has been playing well.
Yeah,
I would argue as a whole, the Eagles secondary has been playing really well. So if the Giants have a good day today against the secondary, I just get the impression that they'll have earned it just because of how well the Eagles defense is playing. I don't even want to acknowledge that possibility, but here we are.
Well, do you see them getting the big play that Jonathan Gannon goes completely against? Or
probably
is a lot
not.
Of just laying off? And then we'll hear Seth Joyner be so upset in the postgame.
About get giving up yards for free.
For free, that's right.
Yeah. And I mean, results-wise, and this is what the Eagles would point to, results-wise, bend but don't break has worked for them. You know, you've kept teams out of the end zone. Right? That's what they would say.
In the early part, I would say no.
Oh, in the early part of the year, definitely not.
No.
But as of late.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you were talking about those four quarterbacks who had 80% completion rates combined.
Yeah.
Another historic.
Yeah.
I think it had happened a total of 7 times, and 5 of them have happened this year.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you're seeing teams make...
Those were good quarterbacks, by the way.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You've got high-quality trigger guys, but... before New Orleans, I got the sense that even in the Chargers game, Chargers scored 27 points. I didn't feel like the Eagles got run over in the Chargers game. Denver couldn't get anything going offensively. Obviously, Detroit couldn't get anything going offensively.
Two bad teams.
New Orleans, what did you...
Banged up.
They were banged up. 29 points. I would argue New Orleans scored a good chunk of those points in... garbage time is what I would say, like when the game was kind of...
They scored like the Eagles did for the first 7 weeks.
Exactly. Exactly. Making it respectable.
Numbers.
Well, yeah, the Chiefs game was the worst offender of that. 42-30, you're like, oh, the Eagles hung in there. It's like they didn't belong in that game from the beginning. Okay. We're sneaking up, D, on prediction time. Oh, yeah, you seem excited about it. Are you prepared? Or should we have Dylan go? We'll have Dylan go first.
Yeah, please, because I'm not ready.
You're not there yet? Okay.
I will be.
Train?
I think it'll go very similar to last week where Eagles just kind of dominate from the start. But I think the Giants will come back a little bit at the end, score a couple touchdowns maybe, and that make people think, oh, they're coming back, and then the Eagles just put them away. I think 37-20.
37-20. Okay.
Whoa, so you went way higher than last week.
A lot of points. Okay. D, I, similar to Dylan, I actually have the Eagles going in front pretty significantly to begin things before things tightening up, but not to a point where the Eagles get too uncomfortable. I'm going to say that the Eagles win 27-20 over the Giants here.
Hmm.
Which would just... barely sneak over that 45 and a half. Just barely squeak by.
45 and a half.
That's what the over-under is at the moment.
I'm going to come up with a number. I'm going to go over.
You are going to go over that?
I am. So
not going to get burned by too few points again.
I don't want to.
It's not fun. Look, I get unders
for winners.
You know what
I'm going to go? I'm going to go 27-24 because that'd be 51.
There you go. That's solidly over the 45 and a half.
It is.
And also nicely Price is Right rules my score. So,
right.
You know, well,
yeah, yeah.
You kill a couple of birds with one stone there. All right. So there we go. We got those.
Reason I was always good about that part of the Price is Right.
Yeah.
I was terrible in knowing what something costs. I don't do any food shopping.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Terrible. So, like, if somebody's like, oh, yeah, you got to do, D, is tell us how much this baking soda costs. You're like,
I either shop at a convenience store, which is, it's overpriced.
Right. Everything's jacked up. Yep.
Or my husband does all the shopping at BJ's.
Ah.
And that's been bought in bulk.
So you still don't have a good
still
read
have
on
no idea.
How much things are. We're Costco people. And somebody who'd never been to like one of these.
I don't think we have Costco in Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to come to New Jersey. You can get all of your stuff in bulk and gas in the same place. It's tremendous. The best bet, gas prices in New Jersey.
Wow.
But somebody's like, oh, yeah. Is that like a way to save money? I'm like, no. It's just a way to buy a bunch of stuff at once.
You're like, you don't have to go as often.
Right. Exactly. You're saving on your trip, but that's it. So all of us have the Eagles defeating the Giants. It gives me cause for concern. We're never unanimous.
I think we were unanimous last week.
I guess that's true. We did.
We
felt good about that.
None of us thought the Saints were marching in to get the win.
Trevor Siemian. Man.
That was bad.
We've talked about it a ton when you're looking at quarterbacks and the haves and have-nots. The haves is such a small number of teams. And by the way, with Trevor Siemian being the quarterback for the Saints, it does throw into like sharp relief what Howie Roseman's talking about, how important it is to have two quarterbacks and how important it is to have your backup be ready to win. Most teams say if your starting quarterback's out, you're done. Like that's it. There's not enough starting quarterbacks to worry about backup quarterbacks at this point. Do you look thoughtful? What's up?
Oh, no. A guy I used to work with, his prediction, I didn't see this beforehand, is almost identical to mine. He's 27-25.
Oh, he prices right at you.
No, because he has the Giants winning.
Oh. Huh.
But he has the 27-25.
Well, does he have the football acumen? Do you trust his read on things?
He covers the Giants.
Okay. So he at least would have a finger on the pulse of the team.
But McManus, our good friend of 97.5, the Fanatic.
Yes.
Has the Eagles by two touchdowns.
By two touchdowns. Wow. In the ungodly event that the Eagles were to lose this game.
Oh, they're going to wipe out all the goodwill they've built up over the last 4 weeks. Let me tell you that. In one full
swoop. Immediately.
Yeah.
The Eagles drop to 5-7. The Giants improve to 4-7. You are right there with them.
And Dallas isn't that far out in front of everybody.
No.
Right? What are they? 7-4.
I think they're two games up on the Eagles right now.
Right. That's why the win is a big deal in trying to catch Dallas. If you lose this, you're done in the division.
I don't even want to allow for the possibility. But that game is coming up, and of course, pregame coverage is coming your way at 10 o'clock with Devon Givens and Derek Gunn. Make sure that you lock in there from Name This Restaurant and Sports Bar on Street Road in Bensalem. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in. Thanks to all of our friends who joined us for the show. Dylan McKinnon, great job as always. D, we'll try harder next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And have a great weekend. I trust that you're golfing. You golfing today?
No, I have another G League. We're part of that back-to-back.
Oh, jeez, the back-to-back.
I get to go see B-Ball Paul and Springer.
And Jaden Springer. We'll have the report next week. D. Lineham and Joe Torti here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.